You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarland. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, it's the HR Happy Hour. My name's Steve Bowes. This is HR Happy Hour 238. I think we're going to call this one, Your People Are Your Business. Can I steal that?
Absolutely.
Cecile Albert-Leroux with me from Ultimate Software. Great to be here. Where I'm live at the Ultimate Connections 2016 event. Joining me, my guest, returning to the HR Happy Hour show.
Third time. I'm so delighted. It's
Cecile Albert-Leroux. Let's get this officially out. You're the VP of HCM Innovation here at Correct. Ultimate Software.
I am.
Great to see you again. Shout out Great to, of course, Trish couldn't be with us today.
I know. We miss her already.
Sadly, believe me, 5 more minutes into the show, you're going to be wait a minute. What's happening here? Well, we'll try. So, Trish, we miss you. We'll get on the show together again soon. Great event at Ultimate Software Connections 2016. I love this event. Great opening this morning. Yeah. Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs did part
awesome?
Of the keynote. Was fantastic.
So funny. What a storyteller. Unbelievable storyteller.
Really, really good. I was one of those kind of talks you just listen the whole time. You were transfixed with it. Right? Great way to open the show. Super keynote. And then Adam Rogers, as well as Martin Hartshorn, talked this morning about some of the big themes that are happening at Ultimate Software. And then, as we sort of move throughout the day, I just heard Cecile talk for a little while about this sort of the three big sort of mega trends, for lack of a better word, big things that your customers are dealing with, are talking about, the kinds of conversations you're having with your customers. And I'm going to just list them real quick right at the top, and then we're going to talk about each one of them.
Yep.
The first one of the one you mentioned, Cecile, was talking about moving from employee engagement to something a little more holistic called employee experience.
Correct.
And I love that one because I've been talking about it too.
I know. So, I think it's a really important one. Go ahead.
That's the first one. So we're going to come back to that a little bit.
Yep.
The next one, also really important and really interesting right now, what's happening in lots of mid-size, even I guess any size organizations,
totally
quite frankly, which is kind of the evolution / the transformation of performance management, right? Yeah. We've read and heard much about this, particularly with some big, high-profile companies making very public declarations that no more performance ratings.
Performance
here.
Is dead.
Right.
We're done.
We're scrapping the review and we're going to something else. And I know you've got some really interesting thoughts around that, and I'd like to talk about that. And finally, the last one, also interesting to me, especially, you know, for a tech guy, and we're at a technology conference to some extent, is the propagation of more predictive and prescriptive analytics.
Totally
and
agree.
I think you said something that was really interesting, Cecile, in that particular topic that I picked up on, which is sort of the role or the responsibility of the technology providers to help organizations make sense of all of these new capabilities.
I could not. I mean, the reason I say that is everyone talks about it, and it's so important. Predictive and prescriptive analytics are so important that we don't want them to be the next great thing that analysts and other people and vendors talked about, but that didn't actually help HR, because there's such a huge opportunity, and yet people are still pretty nervous and they're not quite getting it. And I think the onus is on us to make that a totally natural and a normal part of everyone's work life, really.
I'd agree with that, Cecile, for sure. So let's take these one at a time,
okay.
Right? We'll start at the top. Employee engagement.
Yep.
I've said it at the beginning of the year for sure for folks who listen to the show or read the blog. I'm done talking about it.
Yep.
So I'd love for you to comment a little bit about this idea of employee experience, what it means to you, maybe what it means to Ultimate, but let's talk about that a little bit.
Without a doubt. So first of all, I think that the term employee engagement, I mean, there was a time that probably even 5 years ago when we wanted to call talent management engagement management, and I think that term as sort of the next best technology is done. I don't think that's where it's going to go. I think that employee engagement is something that will become, having an engaged workforce, having engaged employees as an important part of an organization's success. We see it at Ultimate. We see it all the time. However, engagement is a technology. It doesn't exist. It's an outcome of what we believe, and I think you totally agree with this.
I think I do, yeah.
It's the outcome of having a really wonderful, the optimal employee experience. And the employee experience isn't just one moment in time. It's an entire journey, relationship, you name it. It's multidimensional, and it's a lot bigger than one term like employee engagement.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting that you talked about that. And I didn't know you were going to say that this morning as well, so I kind of perked up.
Yeah, lots of surprises.
I perked up when I heard that. I'm like, oh yeah, I've been talking about that too. I wonder if you could sort of share your thoughts about the employee experience in the context of how we typically think of it, which is, you know, the hire to retire,
right.
That life cycle of interactions,
yeah.
Very transactional in nature.
But
that's not really what you're talking about, I don't think.
No, from Ultimate standpoint, when we think about the true life cycle of an individual, it starts with the person at the center. We call it the person-centered life cycle, and it starts with an individual truly being able to discover, unlock, and fulfill their potential over and over and over again in the workplace. That's not something that, you know, happens once. It's not about selecting and developing specifically an individual. It's not about signing someone up for a training course. It goes much beyond, so much beyond the traditional transactions, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
It's about how can an individual truly experience, I am discovering, I'm unlocking, and I'm fulfilling my potential. That's a very different proposal for a person when they're working in an organization than I'm being subjected to all these different processes, right?
Yeah.
And no person can do it alone. It's impossible for an employee to do that on their own. They can be the most incredible go-getter, but they have to have the right environment for that. And that's where I think engagement is also about creating this optimal environment, and that's the part of the experience for employees. So who creates the optimal environment? Well, it's a combination of business leaders, HR leaders, and even your direct leader, supervisor,
and
your colleagues.
Absolutely. The people on your team, right?
Without a doubt. So how do we empower them? How do we give them the tools to be able to help someone? I mean, peer-to-peer even. Why can't I, as your peer, Steve, be able to say, you know, Steve, if you did this, I really think it would help you, you know, get to the next level, for example. So those are the kinds of things. So it needs the help of other individuals in the organization, whether they're leaders or peers, being able to say, what are some opportunities that you have? Where are your strengths? It's not, again, about evaluating here's your strength and here's your weakness. It's about being able to develop those things and really be able to take it to the next level.
It's a really interesting way to frame the conversation. And sadly, one approach I wish I had taken myself when I talked about this recently, because I think I was still a little bit stuck in the, you know, transactional nature of the experience, and let's figure out ways to improve the transactions, which I still think is important.
I agree.
Right? You want a nice office building, if you go to an office, say, or nice, wherever your workplace is, you want that to comfortable and safe and a good environment, and you want
the workplace of the future.
Yeah.
Right? You do want all those things.
You want, like, free, you know, Clif Bars, which I got today in the break room.
Yeah.
That's a little inside joke about the Clif Bars, but I did meet some very nice people from the Clif Bar organization this morning who gave me a Clif Bar.
They never leave home without their Clif Bars, honestly. It's hilarious.
I was having breakfast with them this morning, and I said, oh, you know, doing the typical, where are you from? Who do you work with? And she said Clif Bar, and I immediately, of course, because I recognize
Clif Bars.
Oh, I love Clif Bars. And a couple of minutes later, when she realized I wasn't a complete kook, she said, "Oh, would you like one? I've got a couple. I've got some newer ones here." And
they do.
I will take a Clif Bar.
They whip them out of their pockets all the time or their bags.
It's a great, great brand ambassador.
Yes,
her name was
wonderful.
Lindsay. I can't recall her last name off the top of my head.
Okay.
But very nice girl.
Great.
So I think that's the thing, and I know you guys are going to be working on this with your customers and perhaps doing some more thinking about it. I will as well, like just trying to get past this series of transactions and trying to optimize them, which again is important, and technology plays a big role in this for sure. But the technology is not the center of this.
Agreed.
The interactions really aren't the center of this as well. So I think you guys frame it up in a really interesting way by putting the person in their development really first. Right. It's interesting.
Well, one of the other things, though, I think that's worth you know, mentioning when you talk about that whole employee experience. Without a doubt, technology is a part of that, but technology is about facilitating people having that experience. Whether you're helping an HR person come up with a program or some way to motivate people, whether you're facilitating collaboration between people, it can help and facilitate some of that, but on its own, it's not going to be the end all. And that's why it's really interesting. There's so much talk about engagement platforms and true engagement platforms, right, as tools. And
I see a lot of them that demo to me. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I kind of wonder about the, you know, how far that's actually going to go in the long run, because there is certainly they can help, but there's a really important human element that we can't forget. And if Trish were here, she'd be like, I'm so glad you're bringing the person and the human back in,
right,
Cecile. But I mean, because that is one of those things. There is a big human element that has to be thought of. And also, it is truly a journey. It's something that happens to someone that they take part in. If you really want people to be engaged, they have to feel like they can,
right,
have an impact on it. And when you're going through a performance review, if you're being selected for a job, you really, you know, you can put your best foot forward, but you're not an active participant in those outcomes that could lead to it. And everyone says, you know, motivation, drive, all those things come from people being able to participate and be active participants in their own future, really.
Yeah, and I think you see that in the companies that do the best, like the Ultimate Software, named on the best place to work,
yes,
list again.
We're number 15. Yes, we moved up considerably, which is exciting because it's always a difficult thing. But even almost more importantly, we were named just a few weeks before that the number one best technology place or organization to work for, and that in particular, that was based solely on employee survey responses.
Okay.
It's a little bit different methodology that they go through, that Fortune goes through for that. But that one is so meaningful for our leaders, certainly for Vivian Mazza, our Chief, mm-hmm, People Officer, Scott Scherer, our CEO. For them, that's the true testament, because it's employees saying, we are the best for that.
Yeah,
reason.
And it's the other reason I brought that up, well, one, I wanted you to have the opportunity to brag on that, which
you,
is great.
So we're
and
very
you,
excited
you should
about
be proud of it.
Yeah.
And secondly is, on a show Trish and I did about 2 weeks ago with, I believe, a friend of yours.
Yeah.
I think she's a friend of yours, Lisa Sterling.
Absolutely.
From
Cerdian. Yes,
she,
absolutely.
Yeah, remember, she was...
Yeah, we were on a panel together at
HR Tech last year.
Absolutely.
And one of the things we talked about with her and the folks at Cerdian, and what made me think of it just now here, was the idea that companies that are involved in the human capital space,
yep,
with their technology perspective, or even just a consulting perspective. But anyway, your business is, in many ways, people and,
yep,
HR, right? And working with HR organizations and leaders all around the country, is you guys should probably be pretty good at HR yourselves, right?
You guys,
I mean, obviously, the awards speak for themselves, and how seriously you take the people part of your business.
It's imperative, and we spend a lot of time also working on developing our leaders. Because we've grown quite quickly, a lot of that has to do with we have to prepare our leaders to truly be able to take the next step in developing their people and creating that optimal experience. Because we know that whether it's your direct manager, your peers, that whole group that surrounds the environment in which you work is the key to every organization's success, and the key to, again, that outcome,
right,
not the goal, the outcome, which is engagement.
Yeah.
So.
So this is great. We could talk about a whole show on this, but I want to hit these other two points.
Okay.
You teased them at the top.
I know.
Let's talk about megatrend number two, the evolution/transformation of performance management. Now, I'm sure you're dealing with organizations across your customer base that are going through or these discussions and having these challenges right now, what to do with performance management. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about what you're seeing from customers and how you're thinking about helping them navigate these transitions.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm utterly passionate about this particular topic. I know that's unusual because I'm usually not passionate about any of these topics, but performance is an interesting one because we're getting a lot of feedback. We're getting a lot of questions, inquiries from our customers. They're nervous about this. And whenever you've got a nervous HR population, you know there's something really, really big going on. And there are two reasons, I think, that this particular topic, that, you know, not only are they hearing about, you know, performance is dead,
right,
or we're throwing it out the door. So that makes people nervous. Wow, companies like, you know, like GE, Gap, Adobe,
right,
you know,
right, Deloitte, I think.
Deloitte,
right?
Also, yeah. are the reason that you know, maybe we should be looking at this.
Right.
And so, what's interesting is, number one, the cost of doing traditional performance appraisals is unbelievably high. It's mm-hmm. really, really high.
Yeah, you shared a statistic this morning, which shocked me, quite frankly.
Yeah, so the estimate, this is from the conference board, says that it's about $3,800 per employee per year to do a traditional performance
Good
appraisal,
Lord.
Which means if you've got 1,000 employees in your company, which that's not a huge organization. It's a good-sized organization.
Good, but
you're spending $3.8 million. And that's an interesting thing. We were talking a little bit about, you know, the total cost and how your experience is more than technology. That's not just the technology, mind you.
Mm.
Those are the meetings. That's the time spent,
right.
The time wasted on something that only 8% of business leaders and people who have been surveyed believe that performance is useful and
right.
that it's actually yielding good results. 8%. I mean, that's pretty abysmal. Deloitte estimates that they spent 2 million hours on performance appraisals last year. 2 million hours. If you think about the amount of money
right.
that is spent looking back at the past rather than the looking forward at how do we develop and ensure
on development,
good performance.
On, right, right. And all
how
the
do you ensure good
that
performance
gonna,
rather than just evaluate what's happened?
Right. Yep.
That's it's really costly. So CEOs are watching. And that makes everyone in HR a little bit nervous,
right?
That
was one follow-up I had for you, Cecile, is from the customers you work with and talk to, is this sort of a C-suite kind of operations-led kind of trend as much as it is an HR sort of initiative?
It's definitely being led by the C-suite again, because CEOs are taking notes. Something that's costing this much, and they're seeing the statistics
right.
everywhere. By the same token, what a lot of organizations, it's people are nervous, and so they're sort of sending this off to learning as, oh, you
okay.
know what? We're gonna make learning address this new way of handling performance.
Interesting.
You know, the whole idea, I think Adobe coined, you know, their approach with check-ins, those sorts of things.
Right.
So how are we actually going to roll this out? It's more of a learning initiative, when really it's something that should be in the realm of HR, because no one knows and understands people better than HR. And I think that it's something that HR leaders should be embracing rather than shying away from. But in reality, so it's that the high cost
okay.
is one of them. The second reason that I think it's a huge deal is that, and the reason I think it makes HR in some cases, and actually business leaders in general, nervous, but HR more so, is that not a lot of organizations feel like their management teams are ready to handle this new approach, which is much more coaching-based. It's
okay.
much more interactive. It requires more daily interaction. It's not just about managing stuff. It's about having conversations on a regular basis with your employees. And when I say regular, I don't mean quarterly. You know, I'm talking
yeah.
weekly, how are things going? Think about your employees. Where are they? And actually initiate a conversation. It's a very, very different, again, proposition than what some managers signed up for. And so that's a huge challenge. So I think that between the high cost and the attention that it gets from the C-suite and the fact that a lot of managers, you know, let's face it, we promote people for doing a good job.
Right.
Being promoted for doing a good job does not make you a good coaching leader.
Yeah, so much of the angst or the we hate performance reviews,
yeah.
right? Everybody would say that. We hate
no
it.
Doubt.
We hate the process. No one enjoys it. We don't get much out of it.
Right.
But we've become comfortable with our hatred of it.
Yep.
We understand
it's
it.
It's a necessary evil,
right? We
yeah.
know it. It's like that thing yep. you know.
It's go the devil
get,
we know.
Go get your car inspected every 2 years. Oh, really? I got to do that again?
Really?
This car's going to run for, you know, 30 years. I have to get it checked again by you?
Exactly.
But you have to do it, right?
Right.
And I think that's the danger. One of the dangers of this, to say, well, let's just take this thing we at least we're comfortable with, and we understand,
right.
and our management teams understand, and,
yep.
and even employees, while they hate it,
yep.
they understand it the
yep.
minute they agree
We've
with
got
it.
Metrics
but
to
they
show
understand it, right?
things are working or not, maybe.
And we've tied, and this is maybe a sideline conversation, but we've tied annual compensation
Absolutely.
To this process so tightly
yeah.
that's because it naturally seems like the right
yeah.
thing to
You're
do.
Doing a good job, let's pay you.
Pay for
let's,
performance.
Yeah,
right? How many? If we Google searched that phrase, pay for performance, I believe 30 million hits easily, right? So we've tied those things together so tightly, and I think that's probably another area that
sure,
HR folks are going to be nervous about too, to say, well, how do I figure out what to pay people?
Right, right. No, you're absolutely right. And that does come up. I've heard that specific question from a lot of our customers. It's like, okay, if we're separating comp from performance, this much more dynamic, ongoing way of handling performance, what do we do with that? Well, it's okay for it to be a separate process.
Just maybe put you on the spot a little bit, yep. Cecile. If you were, say, an HR leader at a mid-sized organization, say that 1,000-person organization yep. that we're talking about, and you've gotten this, you're reading the tea leaves, you're reading the journals, you're going to conferences, you're talking to people, your CEO maybe has come to you and said, Madam HR Vice President, we need to do something here.
Right.
What are the couple pieces of advice maybe you'd offer? What should that yep. VP of HR do?
Well, thank you for putting me on the spot.
Yeah, that's a tough question. That was not in the notes.
So I think that first and foremost, any HR leader has to sort of gauge where their organization is. Trying to slam something in like this is not necessarily going to be the easiest thing. It's not necessarily going to be super well received. It could be that just 2 years ago you put in or rolled out a new performance
sure.
appraisal solution. So what do I do now?
Right.
And in fairness, I don't think we've figured it all out in certain industries. There's a compliance related imperative for looking at specifically evaluating on a regular basis.
Okay.
In the
yeah.
healthcare industry,
right.
for example, it's life or death if somebody has this particular, is competent here or not. So I don't think it's something, I think you have to evaluate where your organization is, how ready they are for that.
Yeah, the readiness,
and
sure.
I think that's part of it. I almost see it actually as this continuum.
It's okay.
There's a continuum. There's almost a maturity level or a maturity continuum for organizations. So I think HR leaders need to assess where they are. Are we ready to perhaps phase a little bit of leadership development and
right.
start developing our leaders to be prepared for these conversations so that the traditional performance appraisal can be more meaningful and be more focused on the future rather than just here's what happened and reviewing
right.
the traditional path and also are you ready to start getting rid of some of the forced ranking that you may be
yeah.
using that can be tremendously demotivating? So that's one area for sure that could be that you could start to look at phasing out. I think the next thing is how can we bring in more of a hybrid approach? So there's the traditional where you de-emphasize
right.
Some of the traditional aspects, I'd say, is sort of the first level of maturity, which is, we're gonna emphasize the future and the goal setting part of it rather than the evaluation
yeah.
being maybe even punitive in some cases.
And very prescriptive in terms of the buckets, right?
Exactly.
Like the 20%,
exactly.
right? The whole GE thing.
Be a little bit more fluid about some of
those,
those things. Then I think the next step is a hybrid approach where you start truly formalizing some of the more ongoing dynamic coaching and make that sort of run in parallel. I mean,
okay.
That's what I'd call sort of the hybrid approach. And then the last step, and there again, it's a continuum. So it's not you're in step one, two, or three, but if I think it's helpful to know that no HR leader has to act immediately and go from 0 to 60 in the next, 10 seconds, right?
Yeah.
That's not what we're looking at. So the last model really is, we don't find value in this. And I've talked to customers at every end of the spectrum.
Okay.
I was just talking actually to a prospect. They're not a customer of ours yet. I hope that they will be soon.
Oh, if they listen to this, I'm sure they will be.
But one of the yeah. things I said is, no, we don't see any value in this at all. We just
okay.
need help getting there.
Right.
So there are a lot of things that we can do. And Ultimate is really has taken the charge rather than just looking at, all right, how do you go – some organizations are going to want to do some traditional performance appraisals. Maybe you'll do it a few, two or three times a year rather than just once a year.
Right.
This is it. And then you'll start phasing in some coaching. And we've developed leadership actions to be able to phase in some of that coaching. And then the next step is, you've got regular coaching it's a cadence that's been established between the individual, the employee, and their leader, and even peers in some cases, so that the person feels like they're constantly in a development conversation. It's something that's part of their natural daily life.
Yeah. Cecile, those were all, I think, great pieces of advice. There's a couple things I'll pull out of there, and then we'll
yep.
we'll sort of move on to the
yep.
next
okay.
next topic and get on the rest of our
yep.
lives. The this idea that we can use new approaches and new methods of coaching and helping people develop in part of a process that might still end up at the end of the year, say, yep, in a review, right, in the formal sense, but how we get there. So we're really starting to become and look much, much different than we have in the past, right?
Yep.
Because
that,
one of the biggest weaknesses, right, of the traditional process was it just never was really that informed, right?
Nope.
It was always kind of, oh, God, what happened back in March and
I know,
April?
Horns and halo effect, all those things that were happening.
You know, everybody, like, you know, it's just in sports they call it the contract year, right?
There it is, exactly.
The player outperforms his contract in that last year when he has to get a new contract the
for
next
employees
year.
The last couple of months, they're like, wow, they're really on
I'm going to work hard. I got to get that year-end bonus and get a good review. So I think there is a medium or a hybrid, as you said, for that might work for a lot of organizations in order to sort of get to a place that maybe is ultimately will result in, we're not doing performance reviews anymore.
We don't know yet. I think that's still to be, that's why I think the whole idea of performance is dead. No, performance can't really be dead. It's an important part of the relationship that an individual has with the organization they work for. It's a necessary part of it. You know, ideally, we want people to perform well. We want them to be, you know, happy.
And like many things we've declared dead,
it's not really dead.
This one's been declared dead for a long time, and it just made me think of it. I'll have to look when I post the show. I'll have to look back through the show number.
Yeah.
Some number of years ago, I did a happy hour show with a professor from UCLA who wrote that book, right? Yeah. Death Performance Manager and Performance Manager. He did a lot of press, and his name was Samuel, I think I want to say Cuthbert or Culbert, one of the other.
I think that sounds good.
Yeah, but I remember the show really well because I remember for one specific reason, I'll just tell the story, is so he asked me, we get on the show, and so he goes, Steve, let me ask you a question. This starts in with me, right at the beginning of the show. And I said, sure, go ahead. He was a kind of a crusty guy, you know. And he says, well, did you read my book? You know, the book we were talking about. And I said, and I actually had, I didn't lie, I said, yes, I did read the book. And he goes, well, what did you think of it? And I said, well, I really like the book. That's why, you know, if that was interesting, that's why we're having this conversation. That's why we're doing the show. And he goes, don't you want to ask me what I thought of the book? And I'm like, okay, this is a little odd. And I'm like, sure. What did you think of the book?
Your book.
And he goes, I loved it. It's the best book I've ever read. Like, that was his answer. He was just a crazy guy. But a really interesting show. I'll find out which show it was. And I'll have to listen back to it to refresh my memory about what he said, too. But
he's making the point, right?
He was making the same points you're kind of making, too. It was really just, he was a little more adamant about get rid of the number and get rid of the review. But he definitely was not proposing don't do coaching and developmental feedback, and it was very much a manager-centric kind of, we need better managers, better managers who are better at helping people get to where they need to be.
And I think that I was actually at an HR tech show in Europe a couple of years ago, and there was a whole session. It was actually a great session. Someone was specifically talking about the fact that, you know, we don't do enough to develop managers. We should have true management training, and not management training in the traditional sense, but how do you interact with people? How do you coach your people? Because that's the most important thing a manager or leader can do.
And we've
heard that. We did ethnography studies with some of our customers and even non-customers, and we found that's if in the absence of a manager doing that, what you find are peers that step up and fill that role. There was one person that one of our ethnographers spoke to in particular who said, I'm not a manager. I like being at this level. I'm on the ground floor, and I make a difference for everyone around me and my team. How cool is that? And she wanted to stay there because it was so important to her.
Yeah,
so.
And really important that people are allowed to sort of figure that out about themselves.
Absolutely.
Too, right?
Yep.
This is one more thing we want to hit. This is HR Happy Hour. This is show 238, live from Ultimate Connections in Las Vegas, in the boardroom, which is gorgeous.
it is beautiful.
Where we do the show every year. I think
that's
about.
So
I love
slang.
Those. I'm with my name's Steve Bowes. I'm with Cecile Appert-Leroux, VP of HCM Innovation from Ultimate Software. Longtime show friend, multiple time guest. In the top, you're in the top three, probably, Cecile, of all time best guests of the show.
I love it. I don't want to say you're number one yet.
I just want to be careful.
I would never expect anything like that, but you know, I can work toward it.
Trish,
we all have to have goals. We all have to have goals, but I love doing it. It's a lot of fun.
So we have one more topic we wanted to hit, though. The third sort of megatrend. We talked about employee experience a little bit. We just spent a little bit of time talking about the evolution of performance management.
Yep.
The third trend you mentioned this morning, and I'd like to talk about just a little bit, is sort of this propagation of predictive and or prescriptive analytics.
Correct.
Out into the organization, even more. We've been talking, again, something else we've been talking about in HR circles for a long time.
Yep.
But I don't know. I feel like you kind of alluded to this maybe too. I feel like we're at almost like a little bit of a tipping point on this. We need to sort of start proving this, maybe.
I completely agree. I think that right now, predictive analytics, prescriptive analytics. You know, I'd even go so far as to talk about some of the use of big data and the value that big data brings have been the darlings of the media and of the analyst community.
Sure.
You know, no offense, but for so long,
I'm talking about it
and
a while,
it's time to prove that all of these tools can truly make a difference and take. And change the nature of how decisions are made, help people make truly better decisions, better informed decisions, and take it even a step further. Because again, we talked a little bit about leaders and developing leaders a minute ago. There's nothing worse than you've got a brand new manager, has zero experience leading, and they're faced with a tough situation on the floor of a restaurant or something.
Right.
And what do I do next? This is great. I just found out that I've got someone who wants to leave. I have a predictor that tells me that this person wanted to leave, but what's next? What do I do next?
Right.
That's being able to help somebody in that situation make a good decision instead of saying, I'm just going to bury my head and hope that this problem goes away.
And right, and then sort of HR/HR tech sort of saying, well, here's a number, here's a flag, here's an indicator, good luck. Right.
Take it to the next step, suggest something, and then get smarter about the suggestions that you make. But to be able to bridge that gap, we really have to get people using predictive analytics. And so to me, propagating them and allowing people to truly see the value that they bring, oh, wow, this, you know, whether it's demonstrating through different use cases. We've got a number of customers that have seen the value. They're like, wow, this predicted what would actually happen much better than our manager's sort of, you know, subjective view.
Right, you're right. I know you guys have done some research around that, right? Are these things
helping them sort of learn? But we need to take it a lot further than that. It's got to get, and we have to have this be a totally natural part of how people work. So definitely they've got to be embedded, but we have to have the proof points and the demonstration, and people have to feel like, oh, this truly has helped me. And it can't be this huge, by the way, if you are, you know, dealing with a difficult conversation for an employee, here are the 15 steps that you need to go through.
Right.
No one's going to look at that. So how do we make it just-in-time coaching to help develop people? How do we, you know, prescribe or suggest what's the next step that you could take and then get smarter about whether or not this is the right step to take?
I totally agree with you, Cecile. I think this is where these kinds of technologies just have to end up.
Yep.
They have to move or start moving into
make
this place.
Make people smarter.
Yeah. Like,
or at least allow them to be in certain situations when they don't have time.
Right. Like I've seen a lot of software that say in a compensation kind of workflow we're talking about, right?
Yep.
And a manager's evaluating a bonus or something like that. And we're getting really good, and the technologies are getting really good at sort of presenting that manager an analytic or some data around where this person sits in the range, how long since their last raise, but, you know, all the different categories. But what it doesn't really yet to sort of get there, I don't think yet to get there, what is the impact of you doing X or Y?
Yeah.
The impact maybe on their flight risk,
their motivation,
or their engagement level, or just on how that will affect the whole of the bigger picture. I think we've got to get a little bit better and get a little more human, maybe. Yeah. Maybe that's the right word. Make these technologies a little more human so that the data informs, as you said this morning, the data informs better decision-making, right?
Yeah, and that's a really good way to put it, to make it more human, because I think that the whole, one of the reasons that predictive and prescriptive analytics have not been adopted as readily as they could be is that there's this sense that it's totally robotic and you're taking the human out of it.
Right.
I think the opposite is true, because the conversation can only happen between humans. So what we can do is make the conversation easier, make it happen faster so that you don't risk, for example, losing somebody, and actually encourage that conversation, not replace it. And I think that's another sort of misconception, is that, you know, the next step is we can do your thinking for you. That's not necessarily what needs to happen. We're going to do we're going to have your tough conversations for you. There's no replacement for a face-to-face, or at least a conversation.
Yeah, and I think the big theme, right, if we're talking about, we've talked about three different things, distinct topics on the show here, but I think the big theme, and makes sense coming from your perspective at Ultimate, is they all kind of tie back to that person-centric view of the world, or business, or the organization, or whatever the right phrase is.
Yeah. We say putting people first. So
but
it's true.
I love it though, and I have seen people copy that. Yeah. By the way, I've seen that.
It's all over the place.
People
now
are copying that.
I've seen it everywhere.
I'm trying to think where it was.
I've seen it two different.
Some
two
bank
different
or something.
Places. I know it's everywhere.
Damn them.
But I know. But you know what? That doesn't matter, because if the end goal is that people are put first, then we're doing the right thing. So.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be a big thing to look for in 2016. Yeah. You know, certainly supported by technology, but also just this understanding of we can take data, we can take what we understand about people, we can take feedback that we get from the managers. Or I just think about Skype, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna wrap this up in a second. Like, you do a Skype call, and almost every after every Skype call pops
how
up.
Was that?
How was this call? How was it right now? And
I'm like, but you don't really want to know. You want to know, you know, from a technical standpoint, was it fuzzy or, you know, or something else? Right?
But when the software suggests an intervention, like, hey, you know, go have a conversation with this person, maybe, then you can come back and say, well, this was effective. This was a good idea. Or maybe it wasn't, right? And I think that's 100%. Where we're going, right?
Yep.
So,
Cecile,
we've been at this for a while. We probably should wrap it up.
I know, sadly.
I know, another great show. Well, until next time.
Absolutely.
We'll do it again next year. But this has been the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes, Cecile Appert-Leroux from Ultimate Software. UltimateSoftware.com.
Absolutely.
That's where you go.
Come and find us. We've got all sorts of stuff to share, but thank you.
Great event, as always. Trish, we missed you, but it was a super event. As always, thank you for having me. Thank you for hosting the show.
Thank you for having me, Steve. I love
thanks
it.
Thanks to Adam and to Scott and to the whole team, the great team at Ultimate Software. And now we have to look forward to the rest of the event and a big, big night tomorrow night, right?
Yes, Journey is here.
That is exciting.
Night, which
Journey.
Should be awesome.
I'm sticking around for that.
Yeah, there's no way. How can you miss that?
Cannot miss. That is not
Michael Bublé was last year, which was, you know, which was great. This, I think,
different vibe.
We're amping it up a little bit, which I think is appropriate as we move beyond our 25th year. We're amping it up. So this is we're going into our 26th year this year. Being
fantastic.
In business,
well, great stuff. Thanks, Cecile. Thanks, everybody at Ultimate Software. Thank you for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show, your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.